Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Did you win any money?
No, of course not. I can't play any games to save my life.
Did you lose any money?
I mean, yes. I lost $20 at the Sex and the City slot machine. Of
Oh, my God. I lost $20 at the Sex and the City slot machine, too. Welcome to the first Like a Virgin of 2023. I'm Rose Domu.
I'm Fran Tirado.
How were your holidays? I mean, I kind of know already, but I think you, your trials and tribulations should be shared with the listeners.
You know, I won't detail the saga that was trying to make Adele on Christmas Eve happen for Justin and I, but I will say it required planes, trains, automobiles, cancellations, rebookings, entire flights, just not happening for us, and ended up with me and Justin getting in touch with a mutual friend of ours who knows Adele in order to see her on New Year's Eve, which we did, and it was
so glorious. How was Adele? Tell me about the show.
I wish there were words that I could put to what it feels like to do the New Year's countdown with Adele. It makes perfect sense to me why she is one of the most, if not the most, universally beloved celebrities in, like, the culture, point blank, period. Like, next to Tom Hanks and Dolly Parton. But, like, she really is perfect. Like,
how did she sound?
Obviously, she sounds better than the recording somehow. Like, she busts her gut. And beyond that, her voice is so emotional and she's so expressive. And I'm like, how do you do this show over and over again? But this like mega cam that's on your face as you're performing is like the most emotive thing I've ever seen. Like, it's as if you're performing it for the first time. Like, she's so in her feelings when she performs. And she also is obviously amazing at crowd banter and did tons of it and has so much fun with it. And she cries.
So she does a lot of vamping and
vamping,
talking to the audience.
She goes into the audience. She vamps. She did all of her hits. Like, she cried while talking to the audience. Like, she's just herself. And she does it all without shoes on because she's got sciatica. And she's like, I'm sorry. I got real bad sciatica, loves.
That's like you know that saying where it's like, anything a man can do, a woman can do. And in heels. Like, Adele's like,
not me, love.
Not me. No, I'm barefoot.
Yeah. Oh, God. It was gorgeous. I mean, like, one glass of champagne did cost $50, but
that's not surprising. What were some of the standout songs she performed?
Okay. So I, just context for the virgins. I am like not an OG Adele stan. Justin is very much so an OG Adele stan. I hopped onto the Adele train in her 30 era and have now gone back and started to love her previous catalog. And her songs from 21 were the best songs. Like, she did Take It All, One and Only, and Someone Like You, obviously. And she did Rumor Has It and Rolling in the Deep and Set Fire to the Rain and Don't You Remember, which are all bangers. Every single song on the album is such a fucking banger.
Did she do Hometown Glory?
I actually can't remember. I like blacked out for like some
That's one of my Adele faves.
Oh, God. Yeah, what other Adele faves do you have?
I love River Leah. It's one of my favorite Adele songs because Charlene once performed it at this party that I used to throw. And as she lip synced it, she pissed into our friend's mouth.
Wow, I'm sure Adele would love that. She would live.
She would love that.
We went to a nightclub after. We went to Piranha, and I half expected her to be there because, you know, she's known for hitting up the club after. Yeah,
her and Jennifer Lawrence love the gays.
Oh, my God. Anyways, long story short, it was perfect. What did you do for New Year's?
I rented a house in the Catskills with some friends, and we drove up there on Saturday, made a really lovely dinner. My friend's boyfriend cooked a ham, which was delicious.
Love a ham.
And then we watched Miley Cyrus, her little, you know, New Year's special, which was dumb.
It was? It looked good.
No, I mean, her performance with Dolly obviously was incredible. But
her Paris performance was bad?
No, it wasn't her that was bad. It was just the whole thing. Mm. And all these musical acts who were not Miley Cyrus or Dolly Parton, who I was like, please get off the stage. And there were some little sketches that were cute, but there were just like a lot of commercials. And we were watching it on Peacock, and it was like every commercial break was the same three commercials over and over again. It was excruciating. Yeah, but then we were just in the Catskills for two nights and did a lot of sitting by the fire. I took a lot of baths. We had a hot tub. It was really beautiful.
Love a bath.
And now it's January.
Honestly,
now it is early January.
We pretty much had like the opposite New Year's. Like, I was in Vegas. Have you ever been to Vegas?
I've been to Vegas a few times.
I had never really done Vegas before. And like, it is a theme park. Like, it is. I joked that it was like Berlin for heterosexuals because it's kind of this like sin city that feels like it would be something culturally important to like heterosexual people where they can be like godless heathens. And like, but it's like, it was truly bizarre. But I loved it. I love casinos.
I don't care about gambling. Yeah, I think it's very dumb. So I think it's stupid. Very dumb. But every time I've gone to Vegas, I've, you know, said like, okay, like I'll go waste $20 in a slot machine just for the experience of doing it. Mm-hmm. And once the money runs out, I'm just like done. I disengage. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Like I don't want to get lucky. I'm, you know, even if I won money, I would stop once, you know, once that $20 was up.
Casinos are fascinating and terrifying to me. Like, the fact that, like, you get free booze while you gamble and, like, that they, like, pump, like pure oxygen into the casino, like, routinely to, like, keep you awake. And, like, the fact that, like, there are no clocks in any casinos and they keep the lights on at the same time the whole day because they don't want you to, like, know what time of day it is, which is so fucked.
It's gross. And I do like to smoke a cigarette in a casino. Yes! I did the last time I was in Vegas.
Indoor cigarettes,
I smoked a cigarette while playing the Sex and the City slot machine. And, you know, I loved that little fantasy. And then I went and saw Gaga.
The girl behind me was smoking a Capri. Are the thin ones are the Capris.
Oh my God, yeah.
Right? Capris. Love a Capri with the Sex and the City slot machine. I also have to say, like, casino security are so fucking scary. Like, we had so much, Justin had so much fun playing blackjack with this, like, one dealer, and we were building a little bit of a rapport with her, and we were like, oh, we have to go get cash, we'll be right back. And when we came back, they had reassigned her to a new table, and she was gone. Because the manager had saw that we were, like, getting chummy with her, and so they were like, we don't want them to keep winning money, like, she needs to be moved. Isn't that scary?
That's evil.
It's evil and weird. And also, like...
Also, maybe she just didn't like you. Maybe she was queerphobic and she was like, I gotta get out of here while they're gone.
Yeah, she's like, please reassign me. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah.
She meant the they, both singular and plural.
Also, like, casinos are, like, I forgot that, like, casinos are, like, intentionally designed to be confusing. Like, labyrinthine and, like, covered, like, hall of mirrors. Like, getting out in and out of every casino. And they're all connected, which is crazy. Like, it was like solving a Swedish puzzle box. Like, I really could not. But we should go together. We would, I'm sure we would have an amazing...
I'm not going back to Vegas unless it's for a very good reason.
Katy Perry.
And I'm, like, and I'm being flew out.
It's for Katy Perry.
Yeah. Well, that's... I'm so glad you had a good time at Adele.
Thank you.
So, we both have seen two movies that we have very different takes on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to try a little experiment today. And I think instead of duking it out over our, you know, differing opinions, we're going to each talk about the things that we liked about these films, while the other person sits and judges silently.
Yes.
And maybe one of us will convince the other one that where they're wrong.
Yeah, maybe, but probably not.
Probably not. So probably the two films in question are Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, and Roald Dahl's Matilda, the musical.
Arguably the only two films that were released during the winter break. Like, this is like, it felt like a kind of slow rollout for, it felt like streaming didn't really do that much releases.
I also think even theatrically, there weren't a lot of big Christmas movies this year.
That.
So if you haven't seen either of these, they're both available to stream on Netflix. Obviously, big spoilers for the movies. I can go first and talk about Matilda.
Okay.
So I did mention Matilda briefly in our Best of 2022 episode, which if you haven't listened to, go check out now. So I saw it a while ago and I loved it. You know, obviously I have a big place in my heart for the original Matilda. It was such an important movie to me as a kid. It was such an important book. And I've never engaged with the musical at all. I've never seen it, didn't know any of the music. I was very, not even skeptical about it. I just was like almost a little bit apathetic going into it. And I was shocked by how much I enjoyed it. I thought it was such a fun movie and it was such a beautiful movie to look at. I thought the production design was really incredible. The choreography was incredible. It looked expensive. It looked like a big blockbuster musical that like was going to be released for Christmas. It was the kind of thing that like I think kids will love and like watch over and over again. I thought the performances were incredible, especially Lashana Lynch, who plays Miss Honey. She had me weeping anytime she had like a song or like a tender moment with Matilda. At the end of the movie, when Matilda runs into her arms and they hug, I lost it. Even thinking about it now, I'm like getting emotional. I thought Emma Thompson was great. Those kids were dancing like their parent was standing behind the camera with a knife to their teddy bear's throat. Those kids were dancing like their birthday party was about to get canceled. They brought it all on the floor. And I like that it didn't try to, like, one for one be the original film. It really established itself as its own separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a story that like is magical enough to have this new life breathed into it and exist as its own separate thing.
Is it my time to speak?
Did I convince you? Did I change your mind?
Honestly, you kind of did. I kind of have to agree with you on almost all of your points here. I think the production value was stunning. I thought Lashonda Lynch and Emma Thompson were sublime. I adored the allegiance to Roald Dahl's Matilda and how the story was darker and weirder and, you know, had so much more kind of Roald Dahlian qualities to it. And I felt like that was like kind of one of my favorite things about this adaptation. And I also think the kids' dance numbers were inarguably, like, awards-worthy and so much fun to watch. I definitely had more fun watching this movie than my dear friend Justin, who adores the original Matilda, starring Bicon Mara Wilson. And I do love the Mara Wilson version, but, like, Justin, I don't think, ever read the original Matilda, and so, like, doesn't know how the original movie is, like, really, really not in line with, like, how the book kind of sorts through Matilda's powers and all the different stuff. That said, I think that when children sing in groups, that it is unlistenable and uncanny and cloyingly sweet and, like, just really, really not fun. And I think that every single song in this musical just sounds like a kind of child marching band, kind of, like, every single song is kind of like, I'm an orphan and this is what I'm going to do, here's why I'm sad, and it's like it has this, like, bright, like, marching band beat to it, and, like, every song sounded like that, and it was so annoying. And, like, I feel like I could have watched a version of this where there was no music in it, or where the music
so
was,
that's
like,
just Matilda.
Yeah, that's just Matilda. Or where the music is, like, just better. But I didn't think that the music created emotional stakes or added much to the performance. I thought Lashana Lynch and I thought Emma Thompson's songs were awesome, and I thought their performance of it was great. But the majority of the musical is children singing, and they all sound haunted. And
You are the Trunchbull.
The Trunchbull is trans, period. Also, Bruce Bogtrotter in that fat suit, mama. No.
Okay, yeah, the fat suit was inappropriate.
Unforgivable. That
I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. Let's also, I think that you'll agree with me on this. Mr. and Mrs. Wormwood, compared to the OG, mama, just did not do it. They did not do it.
Oh, I don't agree. I don't agree with you. I loved them. I thought they were amazing. And their house was so beautiful.
I love their house. I did not think that their costuming was amazing, but I love the house. I love the production design of the whole movie. I just felt like because Danny DeVito and the other woman, like, just really fucking nail.
Rhea Perlman, the other woman.
Yes, I don't know her. Oh my God, I'm sorry. But they
I'm gonna kill you.
I know. But they literally just.
You chose books. I chose looks. That's like literally you talking to me.
That's what I'm saying. You chose books. I chose looks. Is like it's their sin. Those performances are singed in our memories as childhood. And so when you come in and you reboot a performance, it's like you have to bring something new, and all I saw was a watered down version of what the previous iteration had done. And I wish they had just done something like what Emma Thompson did or what Lashana Lynch did, which were just like make completely different characters.
Okay, well, I don't agree, but I respect your point of view.
Thank you. Okay, now we're moving on.
Yeah, let's talk about, well, you talk about Glass Onion.
I must say, I did not like Knives Out, the original murder mystery that came out, and this is the sequel to Knives Out. I felt like Glass Onion was a substantially better movie on the casting level, on the writing level, on what it pulled off in the last third, in the twist, and in its primary performances. Janelle Monáe sells this movie so hard and is such an incredible linchpin to
a Lashana linchpin?
A Lashana linchpin to be the crucial beating heart and, like, I think, main character of the franchise. It was so smart and so interesting, and she made Daniel Craig's character so much more fun to watch. The biggest issue that I had with, like, the original Knives Out had a lot to do with, like, I felt like how the movie thought Daniel Craig was the most interesting character, but he was, like, literally so boring and was just this, like, narrator cipher. And I felt like the way Daniel Craig's character was written for Glass Onion was so much more gay, funny, fun, like, made mistakes, like, was a fully fledged character that was interesting and participating in the humanity around him. And I thought that that just, like, hooked me in so much further. And when I first started watching Glass Onion, I actually didn't, like, I felt like I wasn't going to like it because I think the hyper-contemporary, like, name-droppy humor is, like, very eye roll sometimes. But by, you know, no spoilers, but by the twist at the midpoint, I was in Mama. And I felt like it did something that was a lot better than what Knives Out did, which was, instead of being a whodunit, right, they tell you who did it in the first third of the movie. And so the rest of the movie is a why done it and how done it. And I think that that made Glass Onion, I felt, a really substantive and windy action movie that grounded itself in great casting, great performances, a super duper silly but satisfying maximalist ending that had, I felt, brilliant thematic commentary that I thought was, I thought the commentary about, like, you know, commentary about billionaires can be very eye roll. And when we have this, like, Jeff Bezos-y kind of, like, CEO character that's been written to death, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to love this, but the way it kind of talked about disruption theory and the way it talked about the truth and, like, modes of justice were, like, exactly what a modern whodunit should be. And so, yeah, I loved Glass Onion, surprisingly.
That's great. I'm so happy for you.
Love. I thank you for supporting me, Rose.
I thought Kate Hudson was fabulous. And that's it.
Okay. Well, what did you not like about
it? You know,
I think the virgins
As my mother said, as my mother told me, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Well, this is a podcast, and I think the virgins will actually be, like, dying to hear why you didn't like it.
I just thought it was dumb. I liked the first movie so much better. I thought it was dumb.
It's a completely different movie.
It's a completely different movie. I do think it comes down to taste. I think the mystery of the first film is so much tighter. I thought it was so much more interesting. I liked the family dynamics of it. I thought this movie was dumb. I thought Janelle Monáe was horrible. I thought the twists were stupid. I liked Kate Hudson, and I liked Hugh Grant as Daniel Craig's husband. And that's it.
Hugh Grant is Daniel Craig's husband. I forgot. That cameo is so fast. Oh, my God. All the cameos were so gaggy. I mean, two of them are literally dead, which was kind of whack.
Yeah. Well, this is apparently a thing that, like, Rian Johnson, all these actors, like, his films are the last films they appear in.
Wait, who else?
It happened with Carrie Fisher, with... Star Wars, and it happened with Christopher Plummer and the first Knives Out.
Oh,
and now it's happened with Angela Lansbury
and Stephen Sondheim, I guess. So I have to say, like, I really hate, like, movies about billionaires, and I did not actually love, like, kind of the Googleplex setting of Glass Onion, and I feel like that's maybe some of what you were responding to. At the end of the day, like, it's Glass Onion doesn't really, okay, so maybe not. Glass Onion doesn't really have the components of a movie I usually enjoy, which is kind of why I was really surprised by it. But if you will indulge me on, like, what I liked about what the movie taught, it's like, it actually, I felt, had a really, like, incisive critique about what tech billionaires think disruption theory is and what someone like Janelle Monáe thinks disruption theory is, right? And I felt like that was so smart, because when billionaires and, you know, rich people and all these different, like, girl bosses become really rich by essentially adopting ideas and organizing methods and, like, you know, being, like, woke or whatever and using that to, like, climb to the top, they think that that's disruption, when all they're doing is assimilating into capitalism and protecting, like, guarding themselves further and further from real people. But when Janelle Monáe comes into this, like, whole debacle, her idea of what disruption is and how she kind of tears it all down is what true organizing disruption is. It's about destruction, like, volatility. It's about demanding what is owed to you. And I felt like when there's a kind of critical mass at the end that, I guess, provides a path to justice that does not involve the police or the carceral system at all, I was like, that is, like, very radical. And I honestly, I'm not the kind of girl to give Netflix credit, to give Rian Johnson credit, to give big blockbusters like this credit. But, like, I was just like, damn, like, I really loved what the movie did with its, like, prospects of justice, even though it was really silly and maximalist at times.
I think that is, and I'm not saying this in like a patronizing way, I think that's a very generous reading film.
It is. It's a very generous reading.
And like, I think it's really cool that you can look at that and pick that out. And like, yes, that is, those are very good things for a mainstream movie to be saying. I don't know that I agree that that movie is saying those things, but I do think it's lovely that you can like see that in that film.
I think it's about as generous of a reading as when I said that Taylor Swift's Karma, you know, mirrored Buddhist ideologies of karma.
Yeah.
Which that's the thing, is like, that's what I like to do. And I'm not here to give credit to the artist, but I'm here to give credit to how it was interpreted. And
listen, stories are powerful.
Stories are so powerful.
Just like fairy tales, which is what we're talking about today. Later in the episode, hope you stick around for that. Stories are so powerful.
We need to sell that.
Although Fran and I have decided, I think we've said this, we are so over. We're so over media about the power of stories. I never want to see that shit again.
Which, that is kind of the lesson of Matilda when she's telling this fucking story about circus performers in like the most boring B-plot ever. Sorry. But we should sell a hat that says stories are so powerful.
We should. Let us know if you would buy a hat that said stories are so powerful.
Yeah, and tell us what color you think it should be.
Yeah, also just tell us, like, slide into our DMs and tell us what merch you want from us, because we definitely will be selling some merch this year.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Once upon a time, there were two little dolls, and they lived on two different sides of the same kingdom, queendom, because this takes place in a matriarchy.
Of course.
One of them had dark hair, and one of them had red hair, sometimes.
Sometimes,
depending kind of on what time of year it was. The one with dark hair was loved to go to the ball, and the one with red hair did not anymore.
Preferred
to stay at home. And the more hermit-like she became, the more the evil in her heart festered. And instead of, you know, kind of being a like happy-go-lucky little girl, she became a witch.
And she said, if my sister is out here bringing it to every ball, what if there were no balls?
Exactly. So she decided to place a curse on the kingdom. So, and it was called COVID-19. Okay. This is
Shut
spun
up.
Out.
This is as far as we
spun
go.
Spun out a little far.
Wait. You're saying that you, as a witch, created COVID-19 so that we wouldn't have to go to parties?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's fairy tales are things that help us, like myths make us, help us make sense of the world around us. So
yes,
this is,
which is why we're talking about it today, all about myth making in the kind of fairy tale world, I guess.
Yeah, we, you know, have touched before on mythology, Greek mythology specifically, for both of us, you know, one of the things that like really were very integral to our, you know, childhood and formation of like what we liked culturally. And
not to mention, it was one of the most liked episodes from the listeners, according to our listener survey.
Oh my God,
and also
you're
just
not
like
going
to
keep bringing
general.
Up that damn survey.
No. That's all I was going to say. That's all I wanted to say.
But, you know, I guess if we're thinking about, you know, the more Western canon, not that fairy tales are exclusive to the West, obviously they're not. What we think about as, you know, the canon of fairy tales are very much sort of the like, I wouldn't say modern because they're like hundreds of years old, but they're like the more modern equivalent of myths. They are these, you know, like stories for children that like often teach lessons, or, you know, a lot of fairy tales like appear in many different cultures. So they're sort of like the collective unconscious made conscious through a sort of fantastical story. And, you know, in the world we live in, fairy tales are, because the world is all about IP, and fairy tales are public domain, we live in a world where fairy tales are recycled, rebooted, retold, reinterpreted time and time again. And they are, like, some of the most universal stories we have.
Truly. And a lot of them honestly have not been like fully tapped, I feel. Like we know the ones that Disney did, but the way Disney does them is like pretty much completely like refreshed adaptation. Like so much is erased from the original. And then there's also this like whole other terrain of fairy tales that have like never been touched because they're too dark or weird or like American audiences wouldn't understand them, right? What's your favorite fairy tale, Rose?
That is...
Or maybe one of, if you, like, the first one that comes to
well,
mind.
Well, I actually... No, so I know what it is. And it's... Mm. I think the term fairy tale is kind of a loose term. Mm-hmm. But probably Bluebeard.
Ooh, what happens in that one? Refresh me.
So Bluebeard is about this woman who marries this guy and she like goes to his castle and he tells her there's this like specific room that she's not allowed into. And he's like, there's this thing where he's like really like nice to her, but then also he's sometimes really mean to her. And then she eventually goes into the room and finds like the corpses of all his dead wives.
Oh my God.
And this... So as we're talking about retellings, my favorite retelling of Bluebeard's wife is in the Angela Carter novella, The Bloody Chamber. It's one of my favorite books. Ooh. I love Angela Carter. I'm an Angela Carter stan. That's one of my favorites. And one of, I think, it is a tale that turns up in a lot. It hasn't had like a like literal adaptation, but it's a kind of story that finds its way into a lot of media. It's like referenced in a lot of media. I remember season one of You kind of referenced Bluebeard a little bit. And it definitely is a motif that is visited a lot in stories. What's your favorite fairy tale?
I feel like I vaguely heard of Bluebeard, like it's been mentioned or something, and something that I watched. I was trying to Google real quick, but apparently there's a rumor that Disney will return to hand-drawn animation with an adaptation of Bluebeard.
That would be, they would have to really sanitize it. I will say, I also did always really like the Snow Queen fairy tale, which most famously is known as Frozen.
Frozen is an adaptation of a fairy tale?
Yes, Frozen is an adaptation of the Snow Queen, and originally Elsa in Frozen was supposed to be much more explicitly the antagonist, because the Snow Queen is the villain of the Snow Queen, and then, you know, they decided to make it about sisterhood, blah, blah, blah.
It's still a gag to me that they called it Frozen. Like, you know, they have this, like, these, they have a whole generation of stories where it's like, Aladdin, The Little Mermaid, Snow White, like, just, like, plain and simple, like, what the thing is. And then they moved on and they were like, Tangled, Frozen, Brave. Like, it's like these are just adjectives. Anyways, I don't even remember. I've seen Frozen once and I don't remember any of the plot. All I remember is the ending.
Oh, Frozen is so good. Also, Frozen 2 is really good.
I've heard it slaps. It's funny. See, I don't have the depth of knowledge on, like, non-adapted fairy tales that I think you have. I actually really want to read that Bluebeard adaptation. What's the author's name again?
Angela Carter. Virgins out there, if you've never read any Angela Carter, truly, please read The Bloody Chamber. Read Knights at the Circus. She is the diva doll herself.
Love. Yeah, I mean, my boring answer is Little Mermaid. I will always, always, always love that story. I will love the original version of that story that is, like, darker and, like...
And gay. Do you want to hear some tea spilled on the secret gay life of Hans Christian Andersen?
Yes, please.
So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of know it, but I want to hear
So that. We all know that the original, you know, version of The Little Mermaid is much darker than the Disney version we all have seen. In the original story, The Little Mermaid, when she trades her voice to the sea witch for legs, every step she takes, it feels like knives are, like, being stabbed into her feet. She, at the end of the story, is told by her sisters that if she kills the prince, well, the prince marries another woman. Like, he's fully not in love with the Little Mermaid. And she's told that if she...
And that's when the Little Mermaid is like, I'm going to be a lesbian now. She's like, I'm pivoting. Wait, actually, the reason that her feet feels like knives is because...
She's wearing tabbies.
She's putting on a fresh pair of Docs, baby. They have not been broken in yet, okay? They have not been broken in, and she is dying.
So she's told by her sisters that if she kills the prince and his wife, that she will be able to become a mermaid again. Mm. But she refuses to do it, so she jumps into the ocean and kills herself and gets turned into sea foam.
Right.
And she, like, has to spend, like, 100 years in purgatory before she can before she can go to heaven, because mermaids don't have souls. So anyway, Hans Christian Andersen was a huge fag, and The Little Mermaid was actually a story that he wrote and sent to this guy who had spurned his gay advances.
His lover, his forbidden lover, and The Little Mermaid was his avatar, right?
Yeah, and he was just, like, being very cunty, and he sent the guy this story and was like, fuck you, I want to suck your dick and you won't let me. So here's this story about a mermaid who's walking on knives and kills herself.
Wow, honestly, the way that gays, you know, you, like when we watch something like Dynasty or Golden Girls, like the, or like Sex and the City, right? Like, the way that gay men use, like, white women as, like, avatars for, like, their own love stories is just something that has spanned for centuries. Except, you know, Hans Christian Andersen was like, we're gonna do it, like, on the interspecies level. Like, I'm a mermaid now. And does that make it kind of trans, maybe?
Well, yeah, I mean
all mermaids are trans.
All mermaid stories are trans. I mean, I would say, actually, all mermaid stories are queer. And, like, The Little Mermaid specifically is about, you know, transforming yourself for a forbidden love and having that love rejected. I mean, it's, you know, all fairy tales are queer in that they can all have some sort of, like, queerness plucked from them.
I have to say, like, my entry point into, like, fairy tales is, like, loose. Like, I can't quite pin what it was, but I can say that, like, kind of adjacent to this genre, which was maybe my truest first entry point, was The Fables of Aesop. Did you ever read The Fables of Aesop?
Aesop's Fables?
Aesop's Fables. Yeah. Aesop's Fables. Aesop Skincare's Fables. It's like these rabbits and, like, you know, woodland creatures that, like, put on body balms.
What are Aesop's Fables? Can you name some of the, like, big hitters for me?
Okay, there's the tortoise and the hare.
Okay, yeah, of course.
We know her. There's the fox and the grapes. There's
fox and the grapes.
The town and country. The fox and the grapes, yeah. When the fox is like, it's like, okay, the fox and the grapes, the story of the fox and the grapes.
Is this not like the fox and the hound, which is...
No, it's not.
The first Disney movie to ever make me cry.
The first Disney movie to ever fuck. The first Disney movie to ever be like, death is real, and you will experience it in your life. Actually, that was probably Bambi. Unless that came first, I don't remember.
Bambi did come first. Bambi's like one of the oldest Disney movies.
The OG. You know, Town and Country Mouse. There are things like, I don't know, that basically, like, I don't even know if they were, like, religious. I think they were, like, developed in ancient... I think they were in ancient Greece. They were written in ancient Greece. But, like, they still had this, like, weird Christian appeal that, like, my dad loved. And so he would read Aesop's Fables. Long story short is, these fables are pretty boring. Like, they're very morally... Like, they're driven by morals.
The,
like,
fables are boring, but the soap slaps.
The soap slaps. The soap slaps. But this is, like, honestly, what I'm trying to say is, like, the watered-down, very sanitized, very, like, morality-conscious version of fairy tales that I grew up with and that were encouraged strongly.
Well, because we have all these different iterations of kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we have... Mm-hmm. Fairy tales, which are, like, these specifically fantastical, like, bedtime stories that are, like, fabulous. We have fables, which, like, are, like, truly, like, stories that are meant to teach lessons, specifically. Mm-hmm. And then we have folk tales, which are things like Paul Bunyan and, mm-hmm. you know, like shared cultural and, like, I think specifically, like, national, like, that have sort of, like, a geographic specificity of, like, things that, like, maybe were true but have, like, sort of transcended into legend.
Mm-hmm.
And they all serve different purposes.
God, I would love to, like, adapt one. Would you adapt Bluebeard if you could? Or is there something else, like, in the kind of, like, fairy tale realm where you're like, that, like, really should be a movie? You love the Swan Queen.
I do love the Swan Princess. But
the Swan Princess, that's a fairy tale.
Yes, the Swan Princess is a fairy tale. It has, you know, it has been adapted many times into Swan Lake, mm-hmm. and then Swan Lake into Black Swan. Mm-hmm. There was the, like, incredible 90s animated film, The Swan Princess.
So good, which, Odette, Tor.
Oh my God, I was so gagged every time she transformed into a swan and then back into a princess. Like,
honey,
like, the, like, way that the water, like, swirled up around her was so great.
And then her Farrah Fawcett, like, blowout moment.
And,
like,
also the opening song about how she and the prince hated each other and then eventually fell in love. So good.
Love that story.
And it had several direct to VHS sequels that were not quite as good.
I don't even remember the first one. Maybe we're due for a rewatch here of the... What is it called? The Princess Swan?
The Swan Princess.
The Swan Princess.
The fairy tales always have the most obvious titles possible. It's like,
yes.
The thing, thing.
Yes.
The thing and the thing and the thing.
Unless it's Frozen or
but
Tangled.
But that's not a fairy tale. That's a Disney, well, that's a Disney-fied movie.
But it's based on a fairy tale.
But the fairy tale itself is... The Snow Queen. Or Rapunzel. Rapunzel, I never really cared too much about. What I did love was Rumpelstiltskin. Because Rumpelstiltskin is fucking weird.
Weird, gross.
Weird,
gross, powerful.
Weird, like, on so many levels. Because it's like, this bitch her father is like bragging about how she can turn straw into gold. And yeah. so he like gives her up to the king because he's been out just out here lying. And then she gets trapped in the castle and has to spin straw into gold. And then this weird little man shows up and she promises him her firstborn child if he'll help her spin the straw into gold. And also, like, she basically is like kidnapped and enslaved. And then they're like, wait, you're so good at turning straw into gold. We're going to marry you off to the prince and you'll be the queen. And then you will rule over the kingdom that kidnapped and enslaved you. It's just very strange. And then...
And also, like, every adaptation of, like, Rapunzel, like, Rumpelstiltskin, like, he gets, like, very horny around riddle guessing. Like, it's kind of like his kink is, like, the riddles. Or not the riddles, like, the thing about guessing his name, you know, where she has to guess his name, right?
Well, yeah,
that's like, the whole thing.
That's something, I think that's, like, a sort of recurring motif in a lot of fairy tales.
Slash kink.
Is that names are powerful, and also that often villains, ghouls, ghosts, demons, and stuff are always, like, kind of bound by these rules, and rules are very absolute in fairy tales. You know, there's, like, they wouldn't function without them. It's like, sure, Rumpelstiltskin, when she guessed his name, could have been like, fuck you, and then killed her. But also, it's kind of like his own hubris, because it's not like she says his name and he, like, you know, melts like the Wicked Witch of the West. It's like she says his name and he gets so mad. He's so pressed. He's so plucked by it that he stomps into the floor and disappears.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Did you ever watch the ABC television show Once Upon a Time?
No, but I've heard amazing things. Can you kind of overview it for the virgins?
Yeah, I didn't watch much of it. I watched maybe the first two seasons. It's about, like, literally every fairy tale coexisting. Coexist in, like, this same, like, magical realm. And because of a curse by the evil queen, they're all transported to this, like, small northeastern town with no memories of their, you know, sort of magical selves. And
Are there goblins, like, goblin-y, ghoul-y characters that are really, have really gross faces?
Well, there's Rumpelstiltskin, who's, like, one of the main antagonists. And he, he, in the original, like, fairy tale world, has a sort of creepy face. And then in the normal world, he's a pawn broker. He owns a pawn shop. And he's also, as it turns out, the Beast in Beauty and the Beast. And he's in love with Belle. Who's played by the girl from Lost with the baby.
I'm looking, who's playing the girl from Lost with the Baby. I'm looking and I don't recognize any of the cast. But this is, I feel like, well, I have a vague memory of seeing commercials on like ABC or something.
Well, Jennifer Goodwin is Snow White and her, I don't know. It's not worth going, like, going into Once Upon a Time is not worth it. Because I know that there's a huge fan base around that show, but I didn't watch past two seasons. And they did, like, as the show went on, I just know from, like, cultural osmosis that they eventually brought in, like, literally every fairy tale. Like, Elsa from Frozen was in it. The Wicked Witch of the West was in it. It was, like, they really just kind of, they took sort of the Kingdom Hearts approach to inclusion
Say
and
that.
Diversity.
Include D&I. D&I for Disney is actually just combining fairy tales. You know what else does this that did actually permeate the culture that we must discuss, it must be discussed, was Shrek.
Right.
Listen.
Shrek is probably
was the culture.
Shrek probably is like one of the first examples we have of like meta commentary on the Disneyfication of culture. I mean, that's what the whole first movie is really about, like the like Kingdom of Duloc, is it, that's what it's called,
yeah,
is literally like supposed to, like, there's that sort of like small, it's a small world-esque moment. Mm-hmm. It's really like the deconstruction of a fairy tale. That's what Shrek is.
Yeah, because this preceded Enchanted, right? And this is, I thought it was after, but I'm Googling, and it's actually 1 year before Lilo and Stitch. And do you remember the kind of, like, advertising campaign for Lilo and Stitch and how it, like, made fun of other Disney
I do vaguely remember that.
Where, like, Stitch would come in and ruin, like, the banquet hall of the Beauty and the Beast or whatever. Like, but that, like, Shrek was, like, doing that before, like, I mean, this was not Disney, it's DreamWorks, but it really was, like, breaking apart, like, just, like, things that we love. And it was genius. Like, it was so ahead of its time when it came out, I feel. Like, Shrek is, like, kind of a weird part of, like, meme culture now. Like, it's this thing that we, like, all kind of joke about because, like, he's so disgusting and, like, talking about Shrek is kind of, like, it's has this weird, like, early aughts nostalgia attached to it that is, like, universally, like, recognized.
Yeah, there's a whole, like, Shrek core fashion movement, ogre core, swamp core.
I feel like maybe once or twice a month in Brooklyn, someone does, like, a Shrek drag show or, like, a Shrek club night or, like,
oh, yeah,
whatever.
There was,
like,
a Shrek rave.
Shrek is always in the culture, yes!
There was a Shrek rave, like, pretty recently, I think.
Very recently. There's, like, a meme of Shrek wearing these kind of, like, Balenciaga-esque, like, sunglasses.
Yes, I know the one.
You know the one.
I've also seen so much Shrek's dick so many times.
Rose, why? Why have you seen Shrek's dick?
Because I exist on the internet.
You're like, how have you not seen Shrek's
dick?
Yeah. But Fiona, I mean, Cameron Diaz, some of her best work. Listen,
I wouldn't say some of her best work, but, you know, I'm happy because I think there's work that's better. But, you know, I'm happy she was there. And yes, that is, like, it's the perfect subversion of a fairy tale. The damsel in distress, like, the curse that's placed on her is, like, turns her into an ogre. But that's actually, like, what leads to her happily ever after in this very, you know, like, smart, ugly is beautiful way.
And the sequel,
Shrek 2 is incredible. And I think better than Shrek 1.
Well, do you just say that because of the fairy queen, the Abfat, what's the girl's name again?
Jennifer Saunders.
Thank you, Jennifer Saunders.
Oh my
God. Yeah.
You need to learn these things, Fran.
I didn't watch, that's the AbFab woman, right?
Yes. Holding Out for
Hero. I never watched AbFab.
Holding Out for Hero, still not available to listen to on any streaming platform, which is a crime against humanity.
That's crazy. She's so amazing in that movie. God. But yeah, it's Shrek was the culture. My parents took me to that.
Oh, wow. Like, we were allowed.
We were allowed. And I, you know, some of those jokes are very, some of the, like, there's sex jokes in that, in the first one, kind of. And my parents just, like, pretended, like, they didn't exist.
Well, that's so many kids movies. I think especially around that period in the early 2000s are when there was this boom in mainstream kids entertainment. I think when they realized that they like had to start sneaking in jokes that the adults could appreciate into kids movies, but also really around that time, like we were seeing so much fairy tale remakes, and I think we will be forever, just because, like as I said earlier, they're public domain. Like they are, everyone has this. They have this like universal like buy in. We all have this like connotation for them. One that I think of a lot also from around that same time is Ella Enchanted, starring Anne Hathaway, based on the book, which, I mean...
So formative, honey.
Listen, the book was very important to me. The film, less so, because it's like, not good. But for anyone who hasn't read it, Ella Enchanted is, like, a kind of Cinderella retelling in which the Cinderella in question, Ella, has this gift given to her by a fairy godmother that she must obey anything someone asks of her, and that's what leads to her being a servant. And she, you know, like falls in, it like plays out like Cinderella. You don't need more than that. But it's such a good like middle grade book, and it was turned into a film starring Anne Hathaway. And I actually said recently the Taylor Swift's Bejeweled video is very Ella Enchanted core.
It is, yeah. I actually rewatched Ella Enchanted on a plane recently, and I was like, wow, this movie is bad, but...
But Anne Hathaway does a really great version of somebody to love in it.
She does, and she's perfect for the role, I'm not gonna lie.
She is. And I love the blonde British actress who plays one of her stepsisters, who, like, turns up in a lot of those kind of movies from the early 2000s, and also was in Netflix's A Series of Unfortunate Events TV show, and is so good. I don't know what her name is. It doesn't matter.
One of, like, my earliest memories of these kind of, like, adaptations that you're talking about that had to straddle adult audiences and jokes with, like, the fact that it's a kid's movie was Aladdin, based on, you know, 1001 Nights, and not a Western fairy tale, but my mom, like, when we bought this, like, VHS tape, we would just sit at home and watch it over and over again because there were, like, jokes for adults and kids. And I know that, like, a lot of what, like, Robin Williams did with that role was, like, ad-libbed and, like, you know, there's, like, stuff in there that's just, like, stuff that I would never, ever understand as a child. But, I mean, damn. Did Aladdin win an Oscar? Or no, that was Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast was the first animated film to ever be nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture, and is right. The reason why the Best Animated Feature category was created.
Oh, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, the more you know.
Disney's changing the game.
You know... There are so many film adaptations of fairy tales. I also love book adaptations of fairy tales. And there have been so many great, especially short story collections over the years. There's one short story collection that I don't have a copy of it anymore. I don't know why, but I need to get a new one. It's called My Mother, She Killed Me, My Father, He Ate Me. That is definitely one that I recommend. One of my favorite short story adaptations of a fairy tale that I believe I've mentioned on this podcast before is Snow Glass Apples by Neil Gaiman. It's a short story that he wrote, I think maybe back in the 90s, and it is a very, very dark retelling of Snow White, in which Snow White is kind of a zombie vampire monster, and the evil queen is actually the hero of the story. There's a graphic novel adaptation of it that's really beautiful. I would definitely recommend that. Also, have you heard, I mean, you're not as, like, active on book talk as I am, but have you heard of, do you know who Sarah J. Maas is?
No, tell me.
Okay. All right, strap in, virgins. So there's this. So Sarah J. Maas writes in this like cross section of like romance fantasy, and she has this very popular series called A Court of Thorn and Roses, and the first book actually like is basically a Beauty and the Beast retelling, but then it becomes something else. Mm-hmm. And it's like I read most of the books earlier this year, like the end of last year. They're really bad. It's like the most like kind of pathetic self-insertion, like character X reader, like Mary Sue vibes. Like there's this girl who gets kidnapped by a fairy lord and like he falls in love with her, and then she gets turned into a fairy and it turns out she has the most incredible powers and like learns how to use them immediately, and then there's this other fairy who falls in love with her and they're destined to be together, and he's like 1,000 years old and is in love with a 17-year-old girl, and it's just like, ugh, it
sounds like Twilight.
it is Twilight in a way. I don't recommend reading it unless you are really bored, but, you know, go off if you do.
Go off if you do. Okay, look, we would be remiss not to mention, even though we've already discussed it on the pod, one of your favorite musicals of all time, which is Into the Woods, an amalgamation of multiple fairy tales. You know, we've chatted about it, but, like, you know, walk the virgins through, like, how you feel about, like, this, what this musical did for you when you first watched it.
Well, what I love about Into the Woods is that it is, much like some of the other things we've talked about, is a musical that puts all of these different fairy tales together. And the, you know, first half of Into the Woods is about, like, the thing that is at the crux of every fairy tale, which is wishing for something. The musical both starts and ends with someone saying the words, "I wish." Mm-hmm. And then the second act of the musical is about what happens after Happily Ever After. What happens after you get the thing that you want, and you realize that you don't want it anymore, or it doesn't make you happy, or it just leads to a whole new set of problems. And Into the Woods is, you know, tells that story in such a beautiful way. Into the Woods is also so much about the relationships between parents and children. You know, like the I think most beautiful and like emotionally affecting song in the show is Children Will Listen, which is also the song that closes the show. And it is, I think, Sondheim's most accessible work, probably because of the fairy tale of it all, because these are characters who loom large in our cultural consciousness. And this is, I think, like the reason that all fairy tale retellings work on some level, is because you have that narrative shorthand of the reader or the watcher or the listener, whatever it is, already knowing so much through using these characters that you're able to use them to tell a much more effective story that way. And so, like, we already know that the things that these different characters symbolize, like Little Red Riding Hood and Jack and the Beanstalk, are about straying from the path and, like, you know, like not like going looking for adventure because, like, you just might find it and, like, it might kill you or, like, whatever. And through those stories, they're then able to tell, I guess, like, the, you know, like the next, the you know, those fairy tales are like the 101 lessons, and like then Into the Woods is like, okay, well, we're gonna now teach the 202 the 202 lesson, okay, or like the 303, the 666 lesson.
This is AP. This is pre-stat tests. Yeah.
Yes.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
I really love fairy tales. I actually like, I don't know, maybe in some alt, in some like alternative world, I like, you know, like got my master's and I'm like a professor of like folklore or something. LOL folklore by Taylor Swift. I currently am a professor of folklore.
Wait. There's a jukebox musical adaptation of folktales that is set to the
that is set to folklore. Absolutely.
Maybe it's folklore and Evermore. Maybe select songs from folklore and Evermore.
Oh, I absolutely could see like a Taylor Swift jukebox musical where the first act is all folklore songs and the second act is all Evermore songs.
I mean, listen, she is already, you know, doing her directorial debut. She's making her directorial debut soon, making a movie or whatever. So maybe this is like project two. And you're going to write it.
No, she's going to write it. She's not handing creative control over.
She's going to write it, quote unquote.
Tree Payne would only need to do a very cursory Google search of me to get me kicked off the project or not kicked out of a meeting.
She's probably listening to this podcast right now.
Yes, Tree Payne, we love you.
We love you. Okay, if I ever adapted something, I mean, obviously I would want to do Little Mermaid, but, like, it's already being done. And if, like, Sofia Coppola couldn't do her version, then, like, I probably can't do it.
So,
like,
I want the Sofia Coppola version.
I honestly think it would be boring. Like, that's my take. But
it would be beautiful. It would be so gorgeous to look at.
It would be
and
stunning.
And the soundtrack would slap.
And it would be so angsty. Like, so teen angst. I would love to adapt Sleeping Beauty. Because these Maleficent movies are, in my opinion, like, total garbage. Like, I just, it's all CGI, and, like, there's no, like, real imagination in it. Like, there's no, like, invention within the story. And, like, the original Sleeping Beauty, like, is just completely, like, there's so many different versions of it that are completely different from the Disney version, which took a lot of creative liberties.
So what would your take on Sleeping Beauty be?
I don't know. It would be gay,
obviously.
Yeah. The whole thing is she, like, pricks herself on a needle, right?
So, like, maybe she ODs. I actually think there is a Sleeping Beauty retelling that's, like, kind of about that.
No, maybe it's not. Maybe she doesn't OD. I think that's too dark, too, like, queer cultural commentary. Like, maybe it's, like, she's getting a tattoo and the needle's not clean, and she gets an infection. She gets a topical infection.
Maybe it's basically like my year of rest and relaxation, but it's like kind of my sleep. It's kind of Sleeping Beauty-esque.
And she wakes
like
up.
She
and
does
she
a lot of pills.
But she wakes up after 1 year and she realizes that, you know, the invention of the workforce is like the destruction of like our world, and that like we have to fight capitalism. Like that's like the end. No, I'm just kidding. That would be so boring. But like literally she's had like, I think in the original, her name is like Talia or something like that, which is a great
Sleeping Beauty.
Name.
No, her name is Aurora.
No, I'm saying in the original, her name is Talia. Like Aurora.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's Little Briar. They say like Little Briar Rose, and like in some of the earliest appearances of this story, which I think date back to like the 1500s. Yeah, the Sleeping Beauty is named Talia.
Oh,
which is kind of, that's a very chosen name.
Totally. I might actually know a trans woman named Talia.
I might know a Talia too, hon. Yeah, no, I'll have to think on my adaptation.
Okay. I have mine.
Yeah, what would it be? We've been throwing so many ideas into the pot here. What's
so
next?
A weird fairy tale that I always really liked is the 12 Dancing Princesses. Are you familiar?
No, never.
Okay, so the 12 Dancing Princesses is like, it's kind of lame. It's like one of those fairy tales that has like a very interesting setup, but doesn't conclude in a satisfying way. So there's this king and he has 12 daughters, and they're like not allowed to get married for some reason. And every night he locks them into their room. But every morning the 12 princesses are exhausted and their shoes are like all beat up as if they've been dancing all night. And so the king is like, okay, if anyone can figure out what the fuck my daughters are doing at night
to these shoes,
they, you know, they will get like whatever they want. Like I'll grant them anything they want. And so this guy is like, gets some kind of like cloak that makes him unseeable. It's like the invisibility cloak from Harry Potter. Mm. And he sneaks into the princess's room, which is inappropriate. And finds out that at night they open a trap door in their bedroom and go out to like a lake behind the castle or whatever. And these 12 boats come and pick them up and take them to a castle where they dance with 12 princes all night and then come back in the morning. And the guy who's following them, there's these three trees that they walk by. One of them is gold, one of them silver. I think the other one is bronze. And he like picks picks leaves from them to show the king, like for proof. And so the story ends in this like very unsatisfying way, which is just that he like tells on the princesses to the king, and the king's like, okay, well, you can have whatever you want. So the guy marries the eldest princess and then becomes the next king. And it's like such a lame version of the story. Okay, so here's my adaptation.
Okay, love.
So the 12 dancing princesses, they're like, they live in a punk squat. And
I'm in. Continue.
They live in a punk squat. The punk squat gets bought, but they won't leave. So they're actually squatting. And so this sort of like yuppie developer, decides to like infiltrate the squat to like get them out.
What about squatters' rights? Damn.
Well,
evil.
I mean, that's why he has to use, you know, subterfuge. So he, you know, starts, he like moves, he like starts hanging around, and he's like, what are these girls doing every night? Because like, I can't find a reason to actually kick them out. And then it turns out that there's a secret basement at the bottom of the house where they throw raves, and they're like raising money to buy the house back from the developer. And the shoe thing is like, they're all wearing tabbies. I don't know.
Yeah, the shoes, I was like kind of waiting for the shoe spin. I was thinking like maybe they all work at like Aldo or like Steve Madden.
No, they don't work at Aldo. They don't have
jobs.
They
work at Steve Madden.
They don't have jobs. They're anti-capitalist. So the shoe thing is like they go thrifting every day to buy new shoes because they like wear their shoes out dancing all night. But so this guy is like, oh, and they're not all girls. Like they're all like of all genders.
They're all non-binary.
And so the developer guy, like he starts going to the raves with them and he's actually like really into it and he becomes a DJ. And I don't know, this is kind of spinning away from me a little bit.
I think we need to focus on the shoes. Okay, okay. So it's about the shoes, right? And so maybe they're all, like, maybe they're an organized crime group of, like, punk squatters that collectively steal shoes from Steve Madden as a kind of No, because it has to be Steve Madden, because Steve Madden is the only one that makes, you know, shoes for, like, girls like me. You know what I mean? Like, they're, like, Dillard's, Steve Madden. I'm not going to fucking, like, heavenlyheels.com or whatever, you know? I'm not going to go get some blazers.
Okay, here's what it is. Is these girls sneak out at night and steal people's Essence packages.
And then, except Essence does not have very inclusive sizing. Unless you're doing, you know, the Tommy Dorfman for Simon Miller collection.
This needs a little more work, but I think that there's something there. Yeah, there's something with rave. I do think the basement rave is an integral part of the story.
But we can't forget about the shoes, Rose. It's right. An important part.
It's like, you know,
someone will help us put it together. We're gonna need to develop this.
Maybe
story.
There's a foot fetish thing in there somewhere. What is it about fairy tales and feet? Because, like, that's the thing with the original Cinderella is that the stepsisters in the original story, when the prince comes with the glass slipper to have them try it on, the first one cuts off her toes so her foot can fit into the shoe. And then the birds are like, look at the shoe, look at the shoe. And, like, the prince looks and sees that it's full of blood. And then the other stepsister cuts off her heel and puts in the shoe. And the birds are like, look at the shoe, look at the shoe. And the prince looks at the shoe and it's full of blood. And then the birds peck out the eyes of the two stepsisters. It's really fucking dark.
Okay, between that and the fairy tale you were just talking about and Little Mermaid with, like, you
know, the knives in her feet.
The knives in her feet and, like, you know, the little red shoes.
Little red shoes. I'm sure the Beast from Beauty and the Beast had a foot fetish, too.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, maybe the Brothers Grimm had, like, a foot fetish.
Also,
or maybe Hans Christian Andersen had, like, a foot fetish.
Also, when you think about Beauty and the Beast, like, it's so fucked up because all that happened was the Belle's father stole, in the original story, plucked a rose from the garden of the castle. And right. Then the Beast was like, okay, well, you're my slave for all eternity now. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. Belle comes and treats herself for her father's place because she was the one who wanted the rose. So it's like actually her fault. And right. She gets stuck with him for all eternity, gets Stockholm syndrome, and then mm-hmm. falls in love with him.
And she doesn't, well, okay. I think we've talked about this. So in the Disney version, you know, he has to transform back into a human before she falls in love with him. But in the original, she falls in love with the Beast.
She falls in love with the Beast in the movie. She says, I love you before he turns back into the prince.
True. What I mean is that she doesn't commit to him as a, like, only until he transforms into a human is it, like, a happy ending, so to speak.
Ew.
And there's a, right, but what I'm saying is, like, in the original, I'm pretty sure there's an iteration where he stays the Beast and they stay in love.
I would love to see that version. I think Belle, if after the camera stopped rolling, I think she's like, I kind of missed it when you were. I think she's a monster fucker.
Yeah, and that's actually, what I'm
saying. In the Emma Watson remake, which, you know.
Oof.
I did cry when I saw it in theaters, but there's a little moment at the end where, like, at the ball at the end when they're dancing, where the prince, who is Lord Matthew from Downton Abbey, where he, like, growls at her, which is to suggest that he's retained some of his, like, beastly tendencies, and I would hope that he still has, like, a huge monster cock. Yeah. Speaking of Beastly, have you ever heard of the movie Beastly starring Vanessa Hudgens?
No, is that an adaptation?
Okay, yes. It's a Beauty and the Beast retelling that sort of came...
With
Vanessa Hudgens. It came out post-Twilight and is very clearly trying to capitalize off of Twilight Mania as a lot of culture was trying to do. At that time, and it's also stars Mary-Kate Olsen, Okay, so it's about this like rich kid in high school who's like very mean, and he's very mean to Mary-Kate Olsen, who's just like a witch who goes to the high school, and she curses him to be ugly, and like he doesn't turn into a literal beast. He just like has like weird tattoos and scars and like a staple in his nose.
Oh my god, and his, that like, is so.
I know, and his rich dad sends him away to an apartment downtown, and there, the like Lumiere and Cogsworth are an older like Haitian woman who's not stuck as a clock, but her like children are like back where she's from, and she like can't get them. And then like the Lumiere is played by Neil Patrick Harris, who's blind, who plays blind,
what?
Which is not appropriate. And he at several points in the movie is like, yeah, I mean, you might be a beast, but I'm blind, which is like my curse. And it's like so awful. And so then Vanessa Hudgens, who is Belle, her dad's a drug dealer, and the beast, quote unquote, like witnesses some kind of shady drug deal, and he's like, I'll keep your daughter safe. And so that's how she comes to be like trapped in his apartment with him. And then they fall in love. And at the end of the movie, when she like says she loves him after her dad dies, I believe, he transforms back into being hot again. Neil Patrick Harris's blindness is cured, so he can see. And they go to Machu Picchu. It's a very weird movie.
Nothing that you said in that sentence I could have predicted. Like, word after word, absolutely never. I'm looking also now at like, photos of Mary-Kate Olsen with this, like...
So weird.
...beehive and
so
this...
So weird.
...this eyeshadow, mama.
I mean, she was kind of serving. Let's be real.
Let's say something. This guy as the beast, quote unquote, he looks like he's just going to battle him. Like, he really,
you
like,
know, he looks like he's going to Hunter.
Yeah, he looks like he's going to Hunter. Like, he looks like a normal guy with, like, alt face tattoos and piercings. Like, just giving, like, one of, like, he's giving, it's giving.
He literally could be, like, an editorial assistant at Simon & Schuster, you know?
It's giving Suzanne Barsh's Follies, like, you know what
I mean?
It's giving, like, I have, like, a residency at the McKittrick Hotel, you know? Like,
he also definitely has a Prince Albert, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And an OnlyFans. That is really
which
popular.
I wouldn't subscribe to it, but I would certainly watch clips of it on PornTube.
I know you and I are already working on, like, another, you know, fairy-esque adaptation thingy. But, like, honestly, the Beauty and the Beast is really good for an adaptation. Like, I think
but
we should chase
so
this.
But it's so done to death.
No, it's not. It's only been done by Disney. Like, no one knows what
Beastly
is.
And by Beastly.
No one knows what Beastly is. I've
Many
never heard of
Many people know what Beastly is.
We'll see. We'll let the virgins speak on that.
There was also The Beautician and the Beast, starring Fran Drescher.
Which I've never seen. Why?
It's not good. It's not good. I don't remember literally anything about it, but I remember that it's not good.
Okay, well, I think we should watch it, because honestly, it's Fran Drescher, and we don't have enough Fran Drescher content before she came out as an anti-vaxxer.
She did come out as an anti-vaxxer, that's so unfortunate.
But like a really, yes, she came out as an anti-vaxxer, but like kind of a really nice one, because her whole thing is about like, she has like the Cancer Schmancer, she has the Cancer Schmancer organization, and like her primary concern is like making sure people don't get cancer, and so she looks at like, you know, whatever. Anyways.
Well, no, it was like, it's more about people. She was like celebrating that sets because she's the SAG-AFTRA president. And she made a video where she was like, yay, now people don't have to be vaccinated to work on film and TV sets.
Yes, finally. Finally, inclusion for us.
Yeah, again, inclusion and diversity.
Inclusion and diversity in Disney is so important. Okay, well... I'm so sorry to end on the fact that Fran Drescher is an anti-vaxxer.
I know, and they all lived happily ever after and unvaccinated. Slide into our DMs at like a virgin 42069. Please rate us on Spotify, review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us at Like a Virgin for 2069. I'm your co-host, Rose Domu. You can follow me anywhere online at Rose Domu.
And I'm Fran Torrado. You can find me at Fran Squishco anywhere you like.
Like a Virgin is an iHeartRadio production. Our producer is Phoebe Unter, with support from Lindsay Hoffman, Julian Weller, Jess Krainchich, and Nikki Etor. Until next week, see you later, virgins.
Ciao.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.